T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
All right, welcome back. 3:06, second hour of the Mark Bearden Show for this Tuesday afternoon. Tomorrow on the show, I'm looking forward to a conversation with my friend Rod Lurie. He has a brand new movie just started streaming on Friday called The Outpost. It's based on Jake Tapper's best-selling book about the battle at Kamdesh in Afghanistan. It's just an amazingly harrowing story and has got a great cast, including Scott Eastwood, Clint's son, Orlando Bloom, and others. And Rod's coming on to talk about this. It was a long, painstaking process to get this movie made, and he did a great job and really honored these soldiers. And there's so many accommodations and awards, Purple Hearts, things like that in the aftermath, but also so many deaths. And, you know, you sit here, and I did, watching this movie last week, just shaking my head. I got pretty emotional in the end as well. But he did a fantastic job. He doesn't know yet that I thought the movie was really good. The last communication we've had, when I was trying to set up an interview, I said, hey, I want to have you on. And I had just gotten a copy of the movie, and I hadn't seen it yet. And his response was, well, let's see if it's worthy. And it's very worthy. And you can stream it right now. I was watching Black Hawk Down for a little while last night, just because it was on HBO. And this is a movie that has a Black Hawk Down feel about it, because bullets are flying. I mean, this outpost was basically a dead zone. I mean, the soldiers that were there expected in many ways to die. So the book was very, very successful. And Rod, although a Hollywood liberal, he'd be comfortable with me saying that. It's not a secret. He went to West Point, and he's a military guy, and he does a really good job here. So The Outpost is the name of the movie. If you want to rent it, you can do that right now. I think it actually might be at the Galleria this weekend. I have to check on that, because he did get a limited theatrical release. So let me say a couple things about a few stories that are in the news that I wanted to cover here. And yesterday, I never really got to the audio of Kayleigh McEnany talking about Bubba Wallace. It made a bunch of news yesterday. And let me just say on that Bubba Wallace story and the president, look, we were early in on that a couple of weeks ago. It wasn't a hate crime. The president calls it a hoax. The hoax is probably not the best term. But here's the deal with what happened yesterday. There's no win there for Trump. Why he started tweeting about Bubba Wallace again, I have no idea. It just wasn't a smart political move. Now, I would have liked for some questions to be answered and some real journalism. You know, if that was any other story about any other incident, somebody out there, maybe this will happen, but there'd be an enterprising journalist at a publication or a blog that would say, okay, what really went on? Now, I'm not saying that Bubba Wallace faked anyone out. I don't know that he did. I don't think that he did. But there are still circumstances of that story that are very bizarre. But nobody wants to do it. You can't touch that story. The other thing you can't touch right now is Colin Kaepernick, right? So I shared yesterday, I put a post up on Facebook on the show page, and I said, this anti-American Castro-loving clown gets rewarded after saying this past weekend, we reject your celebration of white supremacy. And there was a story link there for his first look deal with Disney. They're going to do a documentary and all this crap on this guy. So I was hacked off by the comments. It barely got any coverage. Maybe there's some people out there that didn't know what Colin Kaepernick said, but you can't talk about that because, so I put it up on the show page, accidentally put it on my personal page, thought about taking it down on the personal page because I don't do personal stuff on Facebook or politics on Facebook. I show pictures of my daughter and my dogs and stuff, but I left it up there because I was so pissed off about Colin Kaepernick. So I knew it was going to be an S storm on Twitter. I got a friend that texted me last night, call me from LA. And this is a very, very liberal friend of mine. We don't engage on these things. And I said, I'm not going to call you if we're going to talk race and politics. And his deal was, and this is a guy who's worked in radio, my good friend Gary, who has been fired for more radio jobs than I've even ever had. And by the way, that is not even close to an exaggeration. He says, you still have a job? If so, get off Facebook before you say something you'll regret and lose your job. It's not worth it. Don't let race or politics cost you your career. I happen to have a little experience in this department. And I appreciated that, but this is just one of those things that really has me worked up. And I think Jason Whitlock sums it up better than anyone else. And he's black, so I guess maybe he's got some street cred here above me because I'm white. But Jason Whitlock, sports columnist, talk show host, and he wrote about this. So for those of you who don't know what happened, Colin Kaepernick used the Frederick Douglass "What to the Slave is the 4th of July" speech as the backdrop for his tweet that said, "Black people have been dehumanized, brutalized, criminalized, and terrorized by America for centuries and are expected to join your commemoration of independence while you enslaved our ancestors. We reject your celebration of white supremacy and look forward to liberation for all." So, look, and there's not a lot that gets me going to the point where I think it's outrageous and, I want to maybe punch a wall, but this certainly did. And I think it deserves attention. That's why I'm not going to let it go. I think it's shameful that more people aren't talking about it. I think it's shameful that CNN won't cover it. It's really shameful that ESPN won't cover it after propping this guy up. But we know that. They're Disney. They can't do that. So Jason Whitlock says, look, that tweet received 170,000 likes, 60,000 retweets. And he says, I searched and could not find for a more popular 4th of July social media post than Cap's rebuke of our nation's holiday. Like all things Kaepernick and most things limited to 280 characters, Cap's tweet heard around the world is breathtakingly uninformed and devoid of substance. It's a divisive hot take packaged as righteous indignation. Of course it is. That's what he does. The popularity of the tweet, Whitlock says, speaks to the corrosive power of Jack Dorsey's invention. Social media amplifies and legitimizes the voices of idiots, anarchists, and race baiters. Without Twitter, Colin Kaepernick would be a flash in the pan, a long-forgotten quarterback. Not much different from Stan Humphries, Jake Delhomme, Kerry Collins, Neil O'Donnell. People who aren't football fans, those of you who don't understand how football works and how Colin Kaepernick rose to the top briefly because the defenses couldn't figure him out. And look, NFL teams want to win. The NFL teams avoided him because he's a pain in the ass. He is, I got to think of words I can use here. He's not the nicest guy. He's a race baiter and he's not a good quarterback. Okay. So Whitlock says Twitter is Cap's costume. The man is afraid to speak in public, but he gets to masquerade as brain dead Fred Douglass. Frederick Douglass interpreted Jefferson's declaration as the blueprint for emancipation. Yes, Jefferson owned slaves, but Jefferson, George Washington, and several other founding fathers recognized the immorality of slavery and planted the seeds for its removal in the Declaration of Independence. With these truths, or we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. One thing he points out, I can't say this, but Jason Whitlock, he's black, he can say it. When this nation was founded, slavery was a global sin committed by black, white, brown, and yellow sinners across the planet. Black people in Africa owned white and black slaves. Black people in America as early as the 1600s owned black and white slaves. Black people in America owned black and white slaves. He repeated that line. The United States of America, because of the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution, was actually a global leader in abolishing slavery. Slavery was a global phenomenon. Economies weren't reliant on it. You couldn't just snap your fingers and make that kind of global tradition go away. The world still hasn't ridden itself of slavery. But we have, and we did. And we did it because the founding fathers had foresight. They created a system of governance based on guiding principles that allows our nation to evolve faster than others. Whitlock says America is plagued by systemic evolution, not systemic racism. And I think he's right about that. Look, Colin Kaepernick is a fraud. He's a fraud from the very beginning. He doesn't stand for racial justice. He hates America. Now, that's easy to say, right? And I don't think all liberals hate America. I don't think my friend Jane Duker and the people we have on the round table, I don't hate America. We have different ideas and opinions, and, well, I'm usually right and they're wrong. But, you know, I don't think they hate America. It's not even an opinion. Colin Kaepernick hates America. He's proved it time and time again. He certainly proved it over the weekend. And again, I don't know why I have to keep going back to this, but when I put that on Twitter, when I tweeted out, or I'm sorry, this was the Facebook post, when I said this anti-American Castro-loving, there were some people on my Facebook page. I should have expected this. I understand people don't follow facts, and with this case, you would never know it anyway. That Colin Kaepernick proudly wore a t-shirt that paid homage to Fidel Castro the very day that he kneeled and had his moment in the NFL. You cannot, ladies and gentlemen, you cannot eat beef in Castro in Cuba to this day if you're not an elite member of the Communist Party and in the regime. You can have a cow for milk. You cannot eat beef. That's just one small example of oppression. But Colin Kaepernick, our racial hero, thinks that Fidel Castro's Cuba is better than this country. That we are bigger oppressors than Cuba because Fidel Castro sent some kids to school. Patently offensive. Historically embarrassing. But even more so than that, he's never called out on that. On that particular point in particular. So someone on my Facebook page, what does Castro have to do with it? Hey, read a little history. Find out what this guy's all about. Most of the people out there, including your friends, who think that Colin Kaepernick's just a guy who wants racial justice and he's against police brutality, educate them. Show them that tweet from the weekend where he declared his hatred of America. Somebody needs to, because ESPN and CNN ain't covering it. It's 317 at KMOX.
Miss any part of the Mark Reardon Show? Download the podcast anytime.
Initiating download. Stand by.
At KMOX.com/Reardon.
So I mentioned yesterday that, unfortunately, I had a rough weekend. Lost the wallet. That means I lost, I never even carry cash, but I had a little cash in there. Hopefully someone's enjoying it and the credit cards and all that. But here's the biggest pain in the butt, as we know. I had my driver's license in there, and I took a stab yesterday. There's this little office near where I live in High Ridge, and it's off the beaten track, and sometimes it's not very crowded. I went yesterday to think maybe I can sneak in. That did not work at all. But then somebody told me there is a great service out there that perhaps can help me stand in line while I sit in my air-conditioned home. And Kyle Stark is the CEO of Stand in Line Services. He joins me this afternoon. Hey, Kyle, how are you?
Good, Mark. Doing well, thank you. Thanks for having us on.
Well, so did you just come up with this during the pandemic, or was this something that you had in place even before this?
Well, actually, it was my son and I, Jack. We were getting his permit down at the Chesterfield DMV about 4 weeks ago. Pulled up, and the line was wrapped around the building. So I told him I was going home and to call me when he gets closer to the door. So about an hour went by, and I didn't hear anything. So I packed a snack, went down there, kind of laughed. He only made it about 10 feet. So I told him to keep up the good work and call me when he got to the door. So that happened. All went well. Got the permit. And on the way home, Jack had mentioned, hey, what can we do to make this easier for people to stand in line? He saw a woman that reminded him of grandma, and there was another gentleman there that had a disability and he's a good kid. Thought, hey, how can I help? And I thought, well, research an LLC, and I'll help you put it together. And sure enough, a 15-year-old at Parkway Central, who would have known?
Stand in Line Services is the company. Kyle Stark is with me. No, so you're the CEO. What is your son? President, chief, marketing officer, something like that?
Well, yeah, we call him the owner, president. Actually, if I could put a better title to my name, it would be the guy behind the curtain.
So how does it work, Kyle? I know it kind of sounds funny, and it's fun to talk about. Yeah. When I heard about it, I'm like, yes, sure. We need this. But look, the reality of the situation is this could really help people out.
Oh, I tell you, that's exactly what we wanted to do. And it is. It's really simple. In fact, we try to push traffic towards our website, which is standinlineservices.com. Take a look. It's simple. There is a reservation called Book It Doug that you can touch on a few things. You can actually pick your preferred location. You can pick the day of the week, and you can pick the time of the day that you would like to shoot for. We call it the target time. So what we do is we will, when we get in the line, we will text you and let you know. And then we will text you again when we secure your place at the front of the line. So that time that you choose that you would like to have things ready is the time that we aim for, and we're getting pretty darn good at it.
So let's use a real life situation. I don't know.
Sure.
Maybe a radio host who lost his wallet.
Absolutely.
Let's say I lost my wallet. And the High Ridge office is near my home.
Yeah.
And Book It Doug can take me, because I'm on the website right now. So I can say Wednesday, July 8th. But I have to be available. Obviously, I can book it. But I have to be available to come up within 15 minutes or a half an hour, right?
Yeah, we try to give everybody a 10-minute grace period. Most people live about that far away for the most part. And when they take pick a target time, usually it's a time that they can scoot away for a couple minutes and take care of business.
How much is this going to cost people?
It's going to cost you a one-hour minimum service, which is $20, and then it's $10 for every 30 minutes after that. And like I said, give you a little 10-minute grace period just in case. But I think what people really like about it is not only can they pick the location and the day, but that time. It's the target time. Everybody from our local transit bus drivers who work all day and they only have a particular or a little window of opportunity. We've had many of those. People night shift, many of those. Elderly, they don't want to be in the heat. Many of those. It's just a wide gamut of people, to tell you the truth. But the best thing is you can throw that time down. We'll target it. We're very good at estimating, because of the day, the location, and the time, how long the line's going to be. So we can put our line sitter there and ready and then meet that time. And again, it's all tracked by we'll text you when we get in line, and then we'll text you when we have your place secured at the front, and then you can mosey our direction.
So how, obviously, I would hope that something like this is going to probably get you some appointments, but how much are people booking right now? I mean, are you pretty busy?
Yeah, we are. We're really busy. We've been pretty lucky. We've gotten some other good press lately, and TV is amazing. Radio is wonderful. And when I heard that you were going to call Mark, I jumped out of my boots. Big fan.
Well, I appreciate that. Look, and I thank you, but I'm telling you, this is what I need to figure out in order to book my appointment. By the way, I think you priced it too low, but that's just me, because this is worth it. I just have to figure out a time when I can, you know, make sure that I can run up to that office. Where else do you think, because you think about this, this is perfect in this situation, but Kyle, where have you, I know you guys probably thought about maybe things down the line and what possibilities might come of this. What have you thought about?
Well, a couple of things. One, I think everybody sort of figures product drops, phones and shoes and other clothing items that are really popular, games that might be coming out. Even though you might be able to order them ahead of time,
sure,
there's still that possibility it might not happen. There is different product lines. It's Lululemon, I think, is pretty hot right now, and supposedly the lines are out the door, so we're tapping into that. The malls, for example, the Nike store, that place had always been slammed, so they can only let so many people in at a time. There's lines out the door, but those are just,
I got one for you. It's going to be more controversial, but I'm going to tell you right now.
Talk to me.
Dispensaries.
Yeah, I know. That's
got to be careful with the kids.
Let's one of the team up with the local Girl Scout crew and head on over there.
They have long lines at times. See, you gotta think about these things. Well, look, I think it's great. I really, and I'm booking an appointment as soon as I can figure out the time. And I thought this was fun to talk about. Kyle Stark, thanks for coming on. It's Stand in Line Services. Go on to the website, standinlineservices.com. I'm gonna book it, Doug, very, very soon, and keep us posted.
Will do, Mark. Thanks for having me on.
I love the entrepreneurial spirit of the pandemic.
News Radio 1120 KMOX. The voice of the Cardinals.
I feel like we need diversion and entertainment. There's too much heavy stuff out there, and I'm a big Springsteen guy, as you know, and I saw this guy's brother tweet out something about this book, Get in the Car, Jane, Adventures in the TV Wasteland. Billy Van Zandt is my guest this afternoon. Hey, Billy, how are you?
Hi, Mark. I'm happy to be here. Thanks.
Well, thanks for coming on because, you know, I think we do need some entertainment and some things that are lighter, and I know that your career sort of provides that a little bit in the stories that you tell in this book. Let's kind of go over what Billy Van Zandt has done, Emmy-nominated writer, producer, and you've written a bunch of books, haven't you?
A lot of plays, 25 plays and over 300 hours of sitcom on TV.
So how did this book, Get in the Car, Jane, kind of come together, and what's the goal here? Because you tell stories over the years with many people that certainly my audience would recognize and appreciate.
Yeah, it started out as a book for my kids because they knew it. They knew my plays. They knew the process of coming to the rehearsal and watching how that all took place. But they never knew how the TV shows got made because it would just be daddies at the studio, you know. So I decided to write a book for them, and luckily I had journals I had kept on every one of the TV shows I had produced. And I went back and I looked at those and I put the book together thinking I had a great beach read, if nothing else, because it's all funny stories I would tell at parties and stuff. And then the pandemic hit, so now it's a pandemic read instead of a beach read. But I cover everybody. I cover Lucille Ball and Don Rickles and Bob Newhart and all the great people I've worked with, mostly stand-up comedians.
Let's talk Rickles a little bit because I was a huge fan of Don Rickles, and I was so lucky. People thought this was a setup. I've shared this story a little bit. Many years ago, I was in an Indian casino in Milwaukee, and Rickles was there. I was at a front table, and he pulled me up on stage for one of the bits, and it was epic. He whispered in my ear as he pulled me up, Billy. He goes, "You better be good, kid." And I will say that I was. I think I was. And I talked to Don after that. I interviewed him once, and it was magical. I wish I could remember all of it because it was sort of surreal.
Yeah, yeah. Working with Don was one of the highlights of my career. I loved the guy so much. The sweetest guy you ever met. But he was always, always on. If a waiter, you know, you'd be having dinner with him and it'd be a normal Don Rickles, and suddenly the waiter comes over and you do 15 minutes attacking the poor guy. And then, and our sound stages were usually, you know, when you rehearse for a sitcom, you have an empty sound stage until the Friday night when you shoot it, usually. Our stage was packed with people from all over the studio because they all wanted to come and basically be insulted by him. But he was a ball. And our show was Daddy Dearest with Richard Lewis. We had the smarts to keep the cameras rolling every time somebody would say cut. We kept the cameras on because Don would immediately go into his act and start, you know, doing his thing. So we ended up making the show shorter and shorter and shorter because we kept putting more and more outtakes at the end of the show because it was just too funny. But I love
that. That is awesome. Yeah, he's certainly missed. There's no doubt about that. All right, tell the story about Lucille Ball welcoming you into your home. And then this has a bit of context here because the critics haven't been kind at this time to Lucille Ball.
Yeah, she had done her last, what turned out to be her last TV series, and I was invited to the house. And they were just cruel, and mostly because they just said she was too old to be doing it. She was only 77 or something. And so I walk up the front door, and she answered the door. And she had a margarita in her hand, and she pretended she was drunk and staggered and went, "Hello, I used to be in television." And it was funny, but it was horrible at the same time because you had this icon who was treated badly, but she was great. She was the reason I got into show business. I wanted to do the kind of comedy that they did on I Love Lucy. Her writers taught me how to write, basically, and her timing taught me comedy timing. And so everything about working with her was a dream come true. And I finally, when I first came out to L.A., I went straight from the airport. I was filming a movie. Jaws 2 was my first movie. So I went from the airport straight to Lucy's house because I wanted to meet her. And my girlfriend said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm getting out of the car. I'm going to go meet her." She said, "What are you, crazy?" And she hid under the dashboard. And I walked up to the front door and knocked on the door. And a houseboy answered the door. And I said, "Billy Van Zandt's here to see Lucille Ball." And he said, "She's not home now." Slammed the door in my face. But we got back in the car and I left. 10 years later, I'm in her house as a guest, and I asked her about Charlie Chaplin. I said, I know you've worked, I know he influenced you, but I never saw you work together. Do you have pictures of him or anything? She said, no, but I'll tell you a funny story. I never met him. But in 1976, I was in Switzerland, and I found out where he lived. So my husband and I drove over. I got out of the car. He said, what are you doing? I said, I'm going to meet Charlie Chaplin. And she said, I walked up the door, to the door. I knocked on the door. Houseboy entered the door. I said, Lucille Ball's here to see Charlie Chaplin. And they slammed the door in my face. I never told her my part of that same story. Because right prior to that, we were talking about how her house was basically right on the street. And for security reasons, if a fan got out of hand, they could press a button and bars would come down over the windows. So I thought if I told her my wow. part of the story, it'd throw me out of the house.
That is awesome. Billy Van Zandt, get in the car, Jane. Adventures in the TV Wasteland. I love that you kept all these journals and can tell these stories. Out of curiosity, because obviously this was a sad story from last week, did you work with Carl Reiner or have a relationship with him at all?
I knew him through Rose Marie. I was good friends with Rose Marie. And when she got her star on the Walk of Fame, it was talking about a dream come true. It was I had lunch with our table was me, Carl Reiner, and Dick Van Dyke. And I was a kid in a candy store, just listening to them tell stories. And they broke into song, singing a song called Rosie for her. It was great. And I still see Mr. Van Dyke time to time. But Carl Reiner influenced every TV writer there is. You know, he just did. Fantastic man.
So, Billy, what are you outside of the book, and are you still writing plays right now? What are you working on right now?
Well, the 25th play that Jane and I wrote together is called The Boomer Boys Musical, and it's about guys in their 60s, four guys sort of like a rat pack singing and joking about the changes that men go through at our age. And we were touring that for about 2 years, and then the pandemic hit, so all our dates got canceled. So when the world goes back to normal, we will be back out on the road doing that. And it's a fun show, so I'm looking forward to that.
You know, we've all binged a lot of television, I think, over the past 100-plus days because of the pandemic. Are you a fan? Look, I finally got into Schitt's Creek, although my producer always worries when I say that word. I thought it was hilarious. I'm on the last season of that, and I can't believe I let it go so long to finally appreciate it. I've actually started rewatching Curb Your Enthusiasm because I'm such a big fan of Larry David. What are you watching, or what have you binged recently that you really liked? Is there anything that comes to mind?
I came to Schitt's Creek late, and I was so sorry to see that go, I got to tell you. Fleabag I was late to, because I thought the first 2-3 episodes were just a little too gross, for lack of a better word, for me. And then I suddenly got into the characters, and I ended up loving that, too. But the first, any show where there's a woman sitting on a toilet having a scene, I don't really need to see that.
Yeah, so, I watched the first episode of that, and I didn't continue, so maybe I did watch the first episode. I thought it was funny, but I understand your point there, having seen that, yes.
I know. I mostly don't watch comedies because I do it for a living, so when I sit there watching those, I go, oh, you missed that, oh, that could have been better. So I like, Ozark is my kind of show. Those kind of shows I love.
Ozark. Here in Missouri, Ozark. It's in, believe it or not, it's more accurate representation than you might think down there at the Lake of the Ozarks. Well, Get in the Car, Jane, is the name of the book. Billy Van Zandt, thanks so much for coming on here on Cable X in St. Louis and talking about it and sharing some stories. I think will inspire some people to check out this book for sure. And do you think we're ever going to get your brother and Bruce back on the road again? I mean, I was hopeful by the end of this year, beginning of next year, but then everything changed in March, Billy.
Yeah. I think both of them want to go on the road more than you know. It's just a matter of when is it safe. The other thing is, it may end up being perfectly safe for the performers, but what you don't want is, 2 weeks later, 3,000 people all are sick or something. So I don't know how we're going to get back into live performance, but I sure hope so for my own sake too.
Yeah. But I have so many musician friends that are, gig musicians that just are really hurting right now. So we hope that people can get out there. Billy Van Zandt, thanks again for coming on here. I really appreciate it. Get in the Car, Jane, the name of the book.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Billy. 344. Yeah, his brother brought that to my attention because I follow Billy on Twitter now. I just follow him today, but his brother Steve is the guitar player for Bruce Springsteen, was in the played Silvio in The Sopranos. I think a lot of people know who he is and has been in other television as well. Hasn't always been on the road with Bruce. Actually quit the band right before Born in the USA tour, went out on his own, and then rejoined like they all did with the reunion in the late 90s.
Mark Reardon Now.
No, never. Yes, always.
Total Information PM at 4 on KMOX.
Well, one of the issues that I think we're all having right now, well, I'm going to just put myself in this category. Dave Klein, you're in this category because your wife's a teacher. We don't know what's going on with schools. So the president actually had a news conference or an event this afternoon, talked about schools. He says he's going to put pressure on the governors to reopen the schools. Here's what he said a short time ago.
We don't want people to make political statements or do it for political reasons. They think it's going to be good for them politically, so they keep the schools closed. No way. So we're very much going to put pressure on governors and everybody else to open the schools.
You know, I heard Dr. Fauci even said, and you could look at hotspots. I mean, Florida, Texas, you may want to reconsider those things. Missouri, there should be no questions. And the guidelines are out, and the school districts are going to announce specifics here in a couple of weeks on July 20th. 3:52, let's do Cut of the Day.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio Cut of the Day.
Cut of the Day is sponsored this afternoon by the Good Feet Store. Pain relief and comfort to fit any budget. So, I saw this over the weekend a little bit, the Terry Crews dust up. Terry Crews, very popular African-American actor who's built like you wouldn't believe. The guy is big and powerful. You've seen him. You know his work and you've seen his commercials, I'm sure. So he did something that created controversy because he said that Black Lives Matter shouldn't turn into Black Lives Are Better. So here's what he said with Don Lemon last night, CNN.
When you look in the city of Chicago, there are 9 children who die by gun violence, by black on black gun violence, from June 20th all the way to today. And you're talking about even with the Atlanta child murders, there were 28 kids who died in 2 years. You're talking about a month and you have 9 black kids. And the Black Lives Matter movement has said nothing about this.
What does that have
thing?
To do with equality, though, Terry? I don't understand what that has to do with equality, because there's crime. There are people in those communities those people aren't just being nonchalant about gun violence. I lived in Chicago. There are many people who are working in those communities to try to get rid of the gun violence. The gun culture in this country is prevalent, but I don't understand what that has to do with a movement that's for equality for black people. It's not mutually exclusive that if you care about equality for black people, that somehow you're going to stop random violence or, unfortunately, kids from being shot. It just seems like apples and oranges.
It's not that way. You know, this is the thing, Don. You know, black people need to hold other black people accountable. I said this the same thing. This is the Black America's version of the Me Too movement.
I think that's pretty powerful. Terry Crews is right. Don Lemon doesn't want any of it. And he's going to basically compare, think of it in this term. He's going to now compare the murder rate in Fenton, where I am, Fenton High Ridge, the suburbs, Chesterfield, to North St. Louis. Don't believe it? Here you go.
You're a high-profile person. You're writing things out there. You know you're going to get backlash. You know people are going to respond to what you're saying on Twitter. So I don't think you should be surprised by that. I have a skin that's tough as an armadillo because of what I do, and I think maybe you should adapt that. But here's what I have to say. The Black Lives Matter movement was started because it was talking about police brutality. If you want an all Black Lives Matter movement that talks about gun violence in communities, including, you know, black communities, then start that movement with that name. But that's not what Black Lives Matter is about. It's not an all-encompassing. So if you're talking about, if someone started a movement that said, cancer matters, and then someone comes in and says, why aren't you talking about HIV? It's not the same thing. We're talking about cancer. So the Black Lives Matter movement is about police brutality and injustice in that manner, not about what's happening in black neighborhoods. There are people who are working on that issue, and if you want to start that issue, why don't you start it?
I mean, when I first heard that, I spit Diet Coke out of my nose. I was laughing so hard. But that's Don Lemon, and that's the narrative at CNN. And they don't want any part of anything else, including the reality of people who are actually getting killed in this country in urban areas and African Americans. And by the way, the murder rate African Americans are 6 times as likely as white Americans to die at the hands of a murderer. So, yeah, someone should start a movement, I think, especially for the kid who died in St. Louis again last night. Total Information PM is coming up.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.